Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. We're going to spend most of the hour discussing a proposal by the company Enbridge to build a pipeline across northern Minnesota. There's already a pipeline called Line 3 in northern Minnesota. It is 60 years old. Enbridge says the new one would replace the old one, be safer, and have higher capacity. There have been nearly two dozen public meetings about this across the state in the past month or so. Opponents include environmental groups and Native American communities who note the pipeline cuts through treaty land and could affect lakes in northern Minnesota where wild rice is harvested. As this project goes through the regulatory process, today is the last day that people can comment on the plan in its current form. So as that happens, we're going to have a conversation about the project. I'm first joined by Lorraine Little, who is Director of Community Engagement for Enbridge. Lorraine, thanks so much for your time. It's good to hear from you.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Later, we'll have Tara Hauska from the group Honor the Earth. She'll be on in a moment. But your questions about what the pipeline will or won't do for Lorraine Little from Enbridge, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. There's a lot of material and a lot written here, Lorraine, about how this is Line 3, the current Line 3, is 60 years old. Is this solely a project to replace an old pipeline?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. So the project that we're proposing is to replace our existing Line 3 with newer, safer infrastructure. And so what we're requesting from the state is permission to construct a new 36-inch pipeline that would allow us to restore the capacity of Line 3 back to its original, which was 760,000 barrels per day. We're currently going through the regulatory process in Minnesota to get that permission.
How did you pick the route that the new Line 3 has? Because as I understand it, it is not exactly the same route as the current Line 3.
So we are following our existing corridor into Clearbrook. Through northern Minnesota into Clearbrook, we follow our existing, seven pipelines. But then at Clearbrook, we do, it is a new route for Enbridge, but it is not a new pipeline corridor. So we go south, and we're following four existing pipelines south to about Park Rapids, and then we turn east, and we follow an existing energy infrastructure corridor all the way into our terminal in Superior, Wisconsin. And essentially, we picked that corridor. We were looking for kind of a balance of how best to follow existing infrastructure, but also to mitigate or minimize environmental impacts along the way. And our current corridor from Clearbrook to Superior has six pipelines in it, and so it's become quite congested from Clearbrook to Superior, and so that was the need for selecting a different route from Clearbrook to Superior.
What happens to the old pipeline for Line 3, the one that's currently in use? What happens to that physical structure if this new project gets built?
We'll be deactivating the old Line 3 in place, which means it's essentially follows several steps to deactivate it. But deactivation includes cleaning the pipeline. So we'd be following several steps to make sure that the line is completely clean and free of oil. And then we would be capping, which essentially seals the pipeline, which means it keeps any water from coming into the pipeline. And then we'd be monitoring that line. And it's important for people to keep in mind, too, that our existing Line 3 is in the middle of our operating corridor. So we would be, monitoring it just simply because it's in the middle of that operating corridor. So we'll be able to keep an eye on it and make sure, it's safe. But deactivation in place is actually an industry standard. There are federal, regulations that would be followed in order to do that. And it's also the safest way to deactivate the line.
Is there If you, as you noted, as I talked to Lorraine Little from Enbridge here, you noted the reason for building the new pipeline is because the current one's 60 years old. There's risk there. It's the potential there could be for some leaks. Is there any risk, or is it actually zero? Is there zero risk once the old pipeline is deactivated for leaks thereafter from the old structure?
Well, that's correct, because it would be free of oil. And so all of the oil would be cleaned out. There are several steps that we, you know, take in order to get the oil removed and the pipe completely cleaned and free of any product. And then we would go through a process that would be basically capping and sealing the line. So it would be disconnected from our existing pipeline system. So it means it couldn't, no oil could enter into the line. And it also means no water could enter into the line.
What considerations did Enbridge give to treaty land involving Native American tribes in the area? And we should clarify that we may not be talking about direct reservation land, but ceded territory that still is encompassed by existing treaties. What considerations were given there when you picked this new route?
Well, yeah, and I think it's important, you know, we certainly understand and respect the rights of all of the tribes. And so we, you know, we did look for a route that would try to avoid reservation boundaries as much as possible, or, you know, on the new route, so that we were, you know, not impacting cultural resources as much as possible. And as you know, in northern Minnesota, you know, it's all treaty land. And so so what we've been doing since we've proposed this route is we have been sitting down and meeting with the tribes along the route, both in terms of the new proposed route and then our existing corridor. You know, I think it's important to have those conversations with the tribes to understand what their position is and what their concerns are and how we might, you know, do things to adjust our route. Or adjust our, you know, operations, or, you know, answer questions that are important to the tribes. And so we have been, you know, having those meetings with tribal leadership.
You mentioned that there's currently the six pipes where the current line three is, and then where it breaks off at Clearbrook, if the new one goes in, that would be where four existing already exist that aren't, you know, currently line three. And so you were talking about two pipeline corridors there in northern Minnesota. When those corridors were originally created decades ago, were they also made with the same considerations you're talking about now for treaty land for Native Americans?
Well, you know what, I can't speak as much to the new corridor because the four pipelines that are in that corridor are not our lines. Mm-hmm. They belong to another company. So, you know, I can't necessarily speak to those. But in terms of our pipelines along, on our existing line, we cross Fond du Lac and Leech Lake, and we come into contact with some land owned by Red Lake as well. And so, you know, we have had ongoing relationships with Fond du Lac and Leech Lake over the years in terms of, you know, talking to them about environmental resource protection or emergency response issues. And so, you know, those are definitely, you know, those are conversations that need to be ongoing with the tribal leadership as well as those departments, so that we're answering those questions and, you know, taking care of the resources the way that they want them taken care of.
There's a concern that some of the lakes where ricing happens are sensitive watersheds and shallow lakes and the like, and the way you have a lake that can have wild rice on it, a lot of great things have to happen in nature for that lake to exist. And so the concern comes that if there's a spill, you destroy this cultural tie to Native culture in the form of wild ricing. The Ojibwe people, of course, moved here looking for the place where food grows on water. And so I'm curious what plans you have to say, look, We are going to make sure that these very sensitive lakes don't get destroyed.
Well, yeah, and first I think it's really important to point out that we've been operating along our existing corridor for, you know, 65 plus years, And that corridor crosses Leech Lake and Fond du Lac. And on Leech Lake in particular, we do cross some areas where, you know, we do intersect with wild rice beds. And those wild rice beds are healthy and thriving. And so we've been able to successfully coexist with that environment for, you know, 65 plus years. But to your other point, you know, our goal is zero leaks on our system, and so we do everything that we can in order to make that happen. We invest a lot of money to keep our system operating safely. We do emergency response, you know, drills and training, and we invest a lot in emergency response equipment. We have our own environmental professionals that work on our staff, as well as, you know, environmental consultants, and then we work closely with environmental departments on the tribe so that we can understand the resource. So if something does happen, you know, first of all, we're able to respond quickly, which is, you know, number one, paramount in protecting any environmental resource. But number two, it's about how you restore it very quickly so that it can, you know, go back to producing the way it did before.
Another question about emergency procedures here as I talk to Lorraine Little from Enbridge, from Chris on the phone, who is actually calling from Florida, but Chris is from Minneapolis. Hi, Chris, go right ahead. Your question.
Hi, how are you? I've got a couple questions. First of all, I love Minnesota wild rice, and I've driven through that country and fished up there, so certainly want to protect it. First question is, why don't pipelines have more efficient emergency shutoff systems where a leak can quickly be detected and where the pipeline can be shut off closer to the leak? Seems like whenever these spills happen, huge amounts of oil spill on the landscape. Second question, which laws control this? Are they federal, state, local, as far as pipeline safety and pipeline, you know, permits?
All right, Chris.
That's it. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Lorraine. Let's ask about the, he wants to know why shutoffs aren't better than he thinks. He thinks they could be better. Talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So on the Enbridge system, for example, our emergency shutoff valves, actually, we have automatic remote shutoff capability. And so we have a control center that operates our lines, that's monitoring our lines 24/7. And so that control center can see every aspect of what's going on in our system all the time. And the computers in that system can actually tell, you know, what product or how what product is being moved and how much is being moved and how much is expected to arrive from between point A to point B. And so if there's any sort of variation in what the computer expects, it can actually trigger an automatic shutdown, which means that it can close those valves. And those valves can be closed in as little as 3 minutes. So that will, you know, shut down the flow of oil that quickly within 3 minutes.
What do you say to people who look at, for example, what happened on the Kalamazoo River in 2010? There are still elements of that cleanup going on. That was an Enbridge pipeline, and 35 miles of river closed for 2 years. Enbridge has spent a lot of money on that cleanup. That was one of the largest inland oil spills in U.S. history. The largest was in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, back in 1991. So what do you say to people like the caller who say, I get what you're saying about technology, but you still have events like what happened in Kalamazoo happening, and even if all those work well, you still risk having thousands of gallons leak in the moment and in an area of northern Minnesota where there's a lot of sensitive lake country to consider. What would you say to people who bring up Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids and other things like that?
Well, I think, you know, with any incident, and in particular, you know, the Grand Rapids incident and Marshall as well, you know, they have a lasting impact on our company. And they do so in a variety of different ways, you know, not the least of which is lessons learned. So, you know, we took away many, many lessons learned from the Marshall incident. And, you know, it's made us a safer company. You know, we've invested $5 billion in people, processes, and technology that helps make our pipeline safer. You know, for example, we have changed the way we look at how we identify anomalies on our system and do repair work. We've invested, you know, $2.5 billion on our maintenance program between 2010 and 2013. We take a different look at how we, how our control center, you know, analyzes potential leaks and then its procedures, you know, and all of those things go into making a better and safer pipeline operating system.
We're talking about the Enbridge proposal to build a new pipeline in northern Minnesota. Last day today to comment on the current phase of the regulatory process. I'm talking to Lorraine Little from Enbridge. I'm going to talk to a member or a staffer from the group Honor the Earth, which was founded in part by Winona LaDuc more than 20 years ago. And here's this is a statement that Winona LaDuc has been making throughout this process. She's attended some of these meetings and had press conferences and the like. I interviewed her back in April, and she said this about the pipeline. Will the Line 3 fight, which is already underway, will it be the next DAPL, the next Dakota
Access? It will be the next DAPL. If they approve that line, I will guarantee you that there will be thousands of people camping.
What do you say to that, Lorraine? We are in the post-Dakota Access pipeline world, and Winona LaDuc is essentially promising another situation like they had in North Dakota, encampments and protests and working to make sure this pipeline isn't built.
Well, you know, I think no one wants that type of a situation here. You know, we all, my 400-plus Enbridge colleagues in Minnesota, you know, we all live here and work here and care about these communities. And, you know, every one of us gets up every day and wants to do the best job possible for our company and our communities. And so none of us wants to see anything like that happen. I think, though, that said, I think we have a bit of a different situation here in Minnesota in that, you know, this the Minnesota regulatory process on Line 3 has been going on since 2014. We just finished 22 public comment meetings on the draft environmental impact statement. This fall, there will be another 16 public meetings on the certificate of need and route permit. When that's all said and done, there will have been about 65 public meetings that have been hosted by various state agencies. So those were 65 opportunities for people to get out and make comment on the project. And not only, you know, could they go to those meetings personally, but they can also write in comments during the comment period. Enbridge ourselves, we've been doing about 400 of our own meetings per year. But I also, you know, think it's important to point out that, you know, the tribes have been very actively involved in this regulatory process. And so, you know, you've got Fond du Lac, White Earth, Red Lake, Mille Lacs. They're all official interveners in the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, like the regulatory process. You know, they're all official. They have official standing in this process. And so, you know, I think we just have a different animal here, a different opportunity where everybody's, you know, been able to have a voice, or, you know, they still have many, many opportunities to have a voice in this project. And, you know, Enbridge has been out actively engaging with the tribes and tribal leadership as well. And so, you know, our goal is to build a new, safe pipeline that is, you know, good for Enbridge, good for our communities, and good for the overall energy transportation infrastructure network.
What happens if you're rejected? What happens if at some point in this process you're told you can't build this new pipeline?
You know, I'm not even sure I'd want to speculate on anything like that.
What would happen to the current pipeline? That would still have to be in service, right?
So the existing Line 3 would need to continue to be in service. We do, you know, have an active ongoing maintenance program on Line 3, and so, you know, that maintenance program would continue. According to our internal inspection data, I think it's important to point out that our internal inspection data is showing that if we, you know, continue to operate Line 3, that we're looking at something like 4,000 maintenance digs that would be required along the existing system over the next many years. And so that's, you know, 4,000 interruptions to landowners and communities that would be taking place versus if we can build a new pipeline, you know, we would completely get rid of the need to do those maintenance digs.
Let's take one last call here for you, Lorraine. And it's Bill in Badness Heights. Bill, your thoughts, your question or comment here today. Hi.
Hi. Well, I thought the Enbridge answer to a question a few minutes ago really dodged an issue. She said they have a control center that monitors the goings on, and they can shut down a leak in about 3 minutes. Well, in that 3 minutes, you can lose a couple of thousand gallons of product spilling out in the environment. And then after, I don't know how long it takes to shut it down, more product is spilling. And then once it is shut down, product will still come out until the pressure equalizes. So the fact they have a control center doesn't, with emergency procedures, doesn't address the issue of what's going to spill before they can react.
Bill, thanks for the question. Any final thoughts there, Lorraine, about that to answer Bill's question?
Well, I think it's important. You know, our goal is zero leaks. I mean, we're putting all of our, you know, money, time, effort, technology into preventing any leak from occurring at all. But, you know, it's important to have good, solid procedures in place. So in the unlikely event that something does happen, you know, we can shut our system down as quickly as possible. And we have our trained emergency response personnel who can get on site quickly, and cleanup can begin as quickly as possible so that any environmental harm is, you know, minimized as much as possible, and that restoration can begin as quickly as possible.
Any final thoughts here before I let you go, Lorraine? What should people know about pipelines, this project in general? Final thoughts. Open mic night for you, Lorraine.
All right. Well, you know, pipelines are the safest way to move large volumes of crude oil. And, you know, our goal with the Line 3 replacement project is to replace aging infrastructure with a newer, safer pipeline. And we believe that, you know, the route that we've chosen is a real balance between, you know, that's taken into account sensitive resources and population, and that our preferred route, you know, underwent extensive engineering and environmental planning. And so, you know, we're looking forward to walking through the rest of the regulatory process and hope that the public will participate as well.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being here.
Great. Thank you.
Lorraine Little, Director of Community Engagement for Enbridge. Joining me now on the phone, Tara Hauska from the group Honor the Earth. This is a group founded more than 20 years ago by Winona LaDuke and others to raise awareness of environmental issues in Indian country. And you've been listening, Tara. And I'll just give you the open mic night now to start. What are your thoughts here on what you heard from Lorraine and your thoughts here on this project?
I would start out by saying that I'm born and raised in International Falls, Minnesota. I'm a Anishinaabe, so a tribal member also from Treaty 3 on the other side of the border. And, you know, I think it's interesting to hear a perspective that first begins by calling it a replacement project, when in fact they are choosing to leave the existing line in the ground, seal it up, go through that process, let it corrode in the environment instead of doing the more expensive thing, which would be to actually pull it out, fully clean up their old mess, and then use that existing corridor. Instead, they want a new corridor with a brand new pipeline with a much larger capacity. The full capacity of this they've calculated out is actually around 915,000 barrels a day of tar sands going through Minnesota's lakes and watersheds. And it's also, I think, you know, pretty disingenuous to say that Enbridge is so concerned and engaged in the public process when they have fought this every step of the way. They have fought originally the environmental impact statement in the first place being issued, and then to make it worse, they've actually announced that in August 1st they are going to begin construction on the Canadian side without the approval of Minnesota permits. So they're going to begin constructing the pipeline anyway. To them, this is a done deal in their minds. So to say that is absolutely false.
Is there a version of what we're talking about, Tara, that you would support? Is there any way a pipeline could be built in a way that says, okay, that's acceptable, we can live with that?
If this was truly a replacement project, I think we'd be having a different conversation. If they were going to clean up their existing mess and use their existing corridor, to keep sending their oil through, that would be a whole different consideration and conversation that we would have. However, that's not what's happening here. So I can't really speculate as to whether or not I would support any version of it, because we're not talking about them cleaning up their old mess. We're talking about them building a whole new pipeline.
They have maintained, Tara, to that point, that because the current Line 3 is amidst these other pipelines, that if you brought in the equipment to pull out Line 3 and then build the new Line 3, that you would risk further damage or more leaks or accidents because you'd be using all this heavy machinery around other existing pipelines. Do you buy that argument?
I don't. When she just got done saying that they chose the corridor as this new corridor based on existing pipelines, I mean, they're using it to justify sending it through the regions that they've chosen, yet they're saying on the flip side, well, because these pipelines are here, we don't want to clean up our old mess. That argument doesn't hold any water.
I want to make sure I understand you completely, Tara. Is your concern the old pipeline that would just stay in the ground, or is it the new pipeline and what it would do?
Obviously, my bigger concern is the new pipeline and the risks that it poses to, you know, a new series of wild rice beds and sending that much tar sands oil through a region that has not prior had it. So that is my primary concern. However, I think it's important that we also keep in mind that Enbridge is leaving this existing line in the ground because it's more expensive for them to actually replace it. They have chosen not to do that. And to say that, you know, this is the industry standard, they talked about, she mentioned how it was an industry standard to deactivate these lines, and that, you know, this is a government, you know, federal process of happening. I saw what happens at the federal government. You know, I live and work in Washington, D.C. as an attorney, and I'm often on the Hill and have seen the deregulation of the process, have seen the oil lobbyists come in and try to make the process as gray as possible. They don't want to have abandonment regulations in place. That's more expensive for the company. They want to just be able to leave their old mess in the ground and then build a brand new pipeline and call that maintenance.
Tara Houska is with us, the National Campaigns Director for the group Honor the Earth. She's with us here. We had Lorraine Little from Enbridge here earlier. Last day to comment today on this pipeline project in the current stage of the regulatory process. I'm trying to get a sense, Tara, and that's why I asked this question earlier about if there's any version you would support, because if the current pipeline is 60 years old and it's aging and they have to do more maintenance digs to make sure it doesn't leak, why isn't even calling it a replacement, why isn't building a new one, whatever you want to call it, why isn't that the better option? It's new infrastructure. Isn't that by default going to be safer when you're hauling and carrying through hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil?
The concern, well, one, pipelines, you know, she mentioned several times that pipelines are the safest route. You know, your prior caller had mentioned exactly what, you know, counters that argument and is more real, which is pipelines send through thousands and thousands of barrels of tar sands and, you know, fracked oil, whatever it happens to be per day. So when they leak, it's a massive amount. It's not like an oil car where you're only spilling so much that's on that actual car. Instead, it's thousands and thousands of gallons until it's detected. We're talking like 20,000 gallons in a single minute that can spill. So, you know, to begin with the premise of pipelines being the safest route, that's not correct. You know, it's simply by amounts and math. I mean, you look at this and most of the spills that are discovered by citizens. They're people walking out on their lands and smelling oil or seeing oil. And then this slow response time, which, again, these oil companies, you know, she mentioned their safety mechanisms, their environmental, you know, emergency management response times and all of that. They are, on the flip side, lobbying different states to you know, deregulate that and to make the response times longer until the public has to be notified. We're not talking 24 hours anymore. Now it's 48 hours. Maybe it's longer than that until the public even has the right to know what's happening. You know, it's simply an argument where you look at it and you wonder, what does the company really want? What's in their best interest? Their best interest is to expand. They want to expand no matter what. They want to have new infrastructure, new investments, new growth, because that's what they need to survive. It does not matter what the impacts are to the people that are going to bear the risk of it.
So what is your message? You've spoken, you've been at these meetings, there have been these 22 meetings, there's going to be more this fall. What is the message? Is the message about let me just end the question. What is your message? What is the theme of what you're saying here in opposition to this pipeline?
I think one of the messages, you know, clean up your old mess and truly engage in a replacement if that's what you really need. And we'll have a conversation about that and that project. But on the flip side of that, you know, this brand new tar sands line that you want to send through Minnesota's watershed and through cultural resources that can never be replaced is incredibly dangerous. And it's insane to expect Minnesota citizens, tribal citizens, to bear the risk of sending Canadian oil through our watersheds. This is an incredible amount of tar sands oil, and tar sands is the dirtiest fossil fuel on the planet. So when we're in these meetings, you know, we're talking about cultural rights, we're talking about fishing, hunting, all these things that Minnesota is known for. We're known for our lakes, we're known for that. And that's what our citizens all engage in. So this is our shared environment we're talking about that's at risk.
And so one of your points there, as I hear it then, is because even though, as Enbridge noted, when it gets to Clearbrook and starts going on the new route that's different from where the current Line 3 is, it's in a current corridor. There are already pipelines there that Enbridge doesn't own, so it would be joining up with that corridor of pipelines. But your point is what? That new pipeline would be carrying stuff that the other pipelines don't and therefore creates a new corridor for risk?
I think that, you know, the message there is twofold. So, yes, it's a new pipeline. It's a new pipeline that's massive, carrying, you know, hundreds of thousands of barrels of tar sands oil, which is a different animal than, you know, fracked oil. However, I don't think that the solution or the reason, justification for having a new pipeline is there's already pipelines there. You know, that should never be a conversation that we have. We should instead say, do we actually need this pipeline? What is the need? What is the risk? And have a true assessment of the balancing of our rights to clean drinking water, our rights to a future versus their interest in profiteering. I mean, that's the conversation we should really be looking at. What are their true risks here? You know, Enbridge has a very bad history of misbehaving. In addition to the two spills that you mentioned, you know, I was out at Dakota Access fighting against that pipeline for 6 months and saw their behavior, which was choosing to invest 28% of funding that pipeline project and then knowing that the Dakota Access security unleashed attack dogs on human beings, on men, women, and children, and Enbridge stayed involved in that project. They never responded to that. They just said, we know there's something going on. You know, I actually got to question their CEO, Al Monaco, directly about that at their shareholders meeting. He didn't have an answer for me. You know, I want to know if this company is so well behaved. She said it was a different situation in Minnesota. They did that in North Dakota. I have no doubt they'd be willing to do the exact same thing in Minnesota.
You mentioned, though, a moment ago, your concerns that this is all about profit for the company. But is it about profit or is it about meeting consumer demand? I mean, we are still addicted to oil and we should certainly have that conversation someday, Tara. But is it realistic to expect that the demand would go down in the long term?
To that, I would ask, you know, that we looked carefully at, you know, Enbridge's finances and the oil and the tar sands industry generally. They're having a really, really rough go. Their profit margins are very, very low. The price of oil has stayed low because demand is being met. You know, they're struggling right now. And the expense of tar sands in particular, it's the most energy intensive method of taking out oil from the environment. You know, you're talking about taking clay out and then treating it with all these chemicals to send it through a pipe and then refining it and going through this really intensive process to get out a product. They're not doing well. The economic value of what they're doing is really, really struggling, and they know that. And that's why they're trying to push this project through. I mean, normally they would go through project finance, project level finance, like any other pipeline. But they know that project level finance, we've been focusing on banks and looking at them. They're instead funding this out of their own pockets. Enbridge is paying for this project on its own.
I'm talking here now with Tara Hauska from the group Honor the Earth. We had Lorraine Little earlier from Enbridge. Today's the last day to comment on this public comment period on the proposed Enbridge pipeline. You can email your comments. You can email them to pipeline.comments@state.mn.us. I will also send out a link to the how to comment form here from the state. A comment here from State Representative Jamie Becker Finn. Enbridge and others need to understand that wild rice is not just a crop that can be restored if there is a leak. What of that, Tara? What of the what would be the best way? If you are willing to have the conversation, as you noted earlier about maybe just replacement instead of a new pipeline, and I understand that's your opinion, but what would then be the best way that the company works with you on the concerns over the sensitive lakes and the ricing areas?
The company is already saying that it is doing that, right? It's having all these public meetings. It's having all this engagement with tribal nations. She kept mentioning again and again Fond du Lac and Leech Lake. I would point out that all 11 tribes are opposed to this project. All 11 tribes are not okay with the new Line 3 corridor they're proposing. There was a trespass issue that happened on Red Lake, so their relationship with tribal nations is not exactly what they would claim it to be. If they truly respect our opinions and they truly respect the opinions of Minnesota in the public process, then they wouldn't be treating this like it's a done deal. They wouldn't be building it already on the Canadian side. I mean, that's a huge investment. Why would they start building a project knowing that they don't even have the permitting on the U.S. side if they didn't think it was already done? And they're gonna instead now use that as a pressure point and say, well, we've already invested this much money. Well, you guys should approve this. You know, how can you possibly reject our proposal? Wild rice is something that cannot be replaced. It is a integral part of Native American identity for Anishinaabe people in Minnesota and around the Great Lakes region. It's something that I go home, I go wild ricing. It's incredibly important to my people, and it's a foundational story of why we even moved here in the first place. It's the creation story. Why did we move here? Because it's where the food grew in water. That's wild rice. And there's, ricing camps and all of these things that are surrounded with that particular plant. So to put that at risk is really dangerous.
Let me get one last call in here. Kathy in Minneapolis. We only have a couple seconds, so if you
Hi.
Can make your comment
you.
Quick, go for it.
Right. We need to look at the big picture, and it's how are you going to transport this oil? I represent a local group that works on the railroad safety issues on transporting oil. So if you don't do it by pipeline, the option is the rail car, and those are equally dangerous. So what is your solution to transporting oil in by any method? Mm-hmm. And by the way, I wrote my senior thesis at the U on wild rice. I totally agree. The wild rice issues are extremely serious. So thank you for bringing this up.
Kathy, thanks for the call. What about that, Tara? If you don't do it by pipeline, you have oil trains.
Is she talking? I mean, I think I couldn't quite decide if she was talking about this particular pipeline or if she's talking about just generally.
In general, if you don't build new pipelines to replace old pipelines, then you're going to have to put more stuff on train cars.
Well, if you don't build new pipelines to replace old pipelines, we're talking about the issue of truly replacing old pipelines. You know, the deactivation sure. part of it, mm-hmm. You're talking about new they are new pipelines, they're new routes, they're new things being put at risk instead of the already existing things that are in place.
What about the concerns in general of the safety of oil train cars? If you're not putting oil pipeline through pipelines and you're putting them on train cars that also pose risks, what are your thoughts there?
I agree. Oil is dangerous. Oil poses a huge risk when you transport it in any method. It's the risks between spilling 20,000 gallons in a minute versus spilling one car they're two different conversations. Both are very, very risky. However, I would, go back to with these existing pipeline infrastructure that's all over the United States and all over North America and around the world. I mean, these aging lines need to actually truly be replaced if that's the method that they think is the most appropriate. Instead of moving to green energy, which is a whole nother conversation, mm-hmm. green economy, look at what are they actually spending and how much profit are they actually making, and what's the biggest concern here, the environment or just the pipelines company's bottom line?
Thank you for your time. I appreciate your perspective here today, Tara.
Thank you so much.
Tara Hauska with the group Honor the Earth. She's the National Campaigns Director. I just tweeted out a link of how you can comment. You can email, you can send in other ways of comment. That's all on that link as well, @WeberTom1 on Twitter.